Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review for Thursday, June 21st, 2018, a rainy Thursday. We'll start with an article on the front page, headlined Growing Knowledge, Camp Discovery Pitches In at Mercy Gardens, by Valerie Wells, Decatur. Atiana Chisholm's grandmother has a garden, and she has helped work in it. So when Camp Discovery's Day included a visit to the Mercy Gardens at Good Samaritan Inn, the soon-to-be Eisenhower High School freshman knew what that would entail. "I just wanted to get some different experiences," Atiana said of her reason for signing up for the camp. Camp Discovery is one of three kinds of camp offered by the Decatur School District in the summer. Camp Connections is for students in kindergarten through sixth grade and focuses on academic achievement and growth in a hands-on way. Camp Discovery, for middle school students, focuses on experiences. Last week, for example, campers learned about art and tried their hand at it. This week, the focus is food, cooking, and gardening. SMASH, senior, and junior are for gifted students. Cindy Jackson, operations manager for Good Samaritan Inn, took the kids on a walk around the garden plots that help supply the kitchen for the facility, which offers meals to economically disadvantaged people, job skills training, and work experience. One of those plots accidentally provides nourishment to some needy wildlife. "You see that shed there?" Jackson asked, pointing to it. "A family of groundhogs lives under it, father, mother, and four babies. We used to have lettuce and cabbage in the area over there, and they just decimated it. So we left it to grow wild, hoping it would keep the groundhogs busy. We call it our sacrificial plot for the groundhogs." Good Samaritan is in the Old King's Orchard neighborhood, and that inspired another plot, Jackson said when she took the kids to see that one. When Decatur was a new community, the neighborhood, now known as Old King's Orchard, was where a man named Dr. King lived and was on the outer fringe of Decatur then. When Staley's came into town and ADM started hiring so big, people started moving into this neighborhood, Jackson said. As they moved here, Dr. King noticed there were people here from all different areas of the community, but they didn't really know each other. So he started installing some of these orchards. The neighbors then came together to care for the trees and harvest the apples, and it really began to form a fellowship area for them to get to know each other and know who they were living next to. Good Samaritan has planted apple, peach, and pear trees in its orchard, and this will be the first year the trees have borne apples, she said. It takes 3 years from planting to the first apples, and while it won't be a big crop, the hope is that the trees, like the other gardens and the greenhouses, will supply the kitchen at Good Samaritan and nourish those who come there. Most of the garden plots used to be the sites of houses that were unoccupied and torn down, Jackson said, including the orchard. When a house is torn down, the water service is removed, making it difficult to keep the gardens watered. That was most crucial in the orchard. Amron installed rainwater collecting troughs and a solar-powered pump that directs the rainwater to the trees for irrigation. After the tour, the students were divided into two groups, one to visit the greenhouses and learn how they work, and the other to assist in some of the garden work. One of the tasks was to cover the ground with black plastic shovel dirt on the plastic to keep it in place, and cover it with straw to prevent weeds from growing. Brachia Clark, who will be in seventh grade at Thomas Jefferson Middle School in the fall, readily volunteered to help when some of the other kids were hesitant. "I've never done anything like this before," she said. "I'm learning something new." Medical care. HSHS buys Decatur ambulance. Pledges no change in service for patients. By Claire Hettinger. Decatur. Patients receiving emergency medical care from Decatur Ambulance Service shouldn't notice any changes caused by its sale to the parent company of HSHS St. Mary's Hospital, according to the new owner. Health Sisters Hospital Systems announced its takeover of the 59-year-old ambulance service Wednesday. E.J. Kipper, president and CEO of the company's Central Illinois division, said patients will still be taken to Decatur Memorial Hospital if they prefer. "It is very important to us to serve both hospitals," he said. the ambulance service's 115 employees will transfer to HSHS with their existing union contracts and benefits recognized, the company said. The fleet of 22 vehicles will remain, and there are no plans to make substantial changes to day-to-day operations. We want to make sure the people of Decatur are taken care of the way we take care of them, said David Burkham, CEO of the ambulance service. We will walk away when it is time to retire and not have to worry about it. Burkham, his brother Mike Burkham, and Dave Krause, Vice President of Finance and Administration, will continue to lead the ambulance service. Neither Kuiper nor the Burkhams would say how much the Springfield-based medical group paid to acquire the ambulance service, which also maintains locations in Pena and Shelbyville. Kuiper said Decatur Ambulance Service reached out to the HSHS system a few years ago to talk about a deal that would serve both locations. We were looking for a company to continue after we retire, David Burkham said. So we needed to find somebody to take over the company and run it as we would like to see it run. The ambulance service was founded in 1959 by the Burkhams' parents, Bob and Sue Burkham. David Burkham said the positives of the deal are that employees will be taken care of, the transitions will be smooth, and the community will continue to be cared for. We are still here doing what we've always done, he said. The ambulance service is an important part of patient care, Kuiper said, and the two companies have always had a good relationship. We've always been extremely happy with the service we received from Decatur Ambulance Service, he said. The HSHS system also owns HSHS Good Shepherd in Shelbyville, where Decatur Ambulance Service operates. Other locations in the Central Illinois Division are HSHS St. John's Hospital in Springfield and HSHS St. Francis Hospital in Litchfield. The Central Illinois Division is the third location in the multi-state HSHS system to own ambulances, Kuiper said. The others are in Wisconsin and Greenville, Illinois. The plan is to continue to build and invest in the service, he said. We might be able to acquire additional ambulance rigs and be able to cover the city even better, he said, adding that the company had talked to city leadership and assured them that nothing would change. We are dedicated to continuing the high level of service we've experienced up to this point, he said. Scoville Zoo's railroad expansion gets green light. Park Board approves $2 million project bid. By Jalen Cook, Decatur. The planned extension of Scoville Zoo's ZO&O express train track picked up more steam Wednesday as the Decatur Park District approved a $2 million bid to stretch the train's route along the Lake Decatur shoreline. The district's Board of Commissioners voted 5-0 to accept the bid from O'Shea Builders to construct the project, which includes extending the track and building a steel bridge that allows the train to cross over a ravine at the zoo's east side location. Mary Cave, an associate with Decatur consulting engineering firm Chastain and Associates, said the contractor anticipates that the expansion will be finished by the zoo's spring 2019 opening. That way, if we want to get in right away, and hopefully O'Shea is on that schedule too, we can make hay while it's dry and the hillside is not slippery, she said. O'Shea's bid was the lowest out of the four base bids Chastain and the Park District received to expand the track, a project that the firm estimated would cost $2.2 million to complete. The train's current route, installed in 1984, takes passengers a one-mile narrated tour of the zoo. The expansion is largely funded by a $2 million donation from the Howard G. Buffett Foundation. In October 2016, Buffett said his foundation would fund the train expansion on the same day that he announced it would fund the Park District's Nelson Park Amphitheater project, which is now under construction. The Decatur philanthropist, son of multi-billionaire investor Warren Buffett, has been a longtime financial supporter of various Macon County organizations. He also donated a $150,000 sculpture depicting conservation efforts at Virunga National Park in the Democratic Republic of the Congo to the zoo in April. Buffett, who was sworn in as Macon County Sheriff last year, also donated $3 million for a law enforcement-themed expansion to the Children's Museum of Illinois, scheduled to open on July 7th. When finished, the extended train route will take passengers past the Scoville Garden House, the Schilling Environmental Education Center, and the west edge of the Scoville Sculpture Park, Cave said. The new track will also connect the zoo with the neighboring Children's Museum. Cave said a loop in the track will send the scaled replica 1863 C.P. Huntington steam train back towards its starting point at the zoo. A portion of the museum's parking lot will need to be shifted and repaved to accommodate the new connection, Cave said, and a passenger loading area will be built near the facility. It'll be right along where the sculpture park is, she said. The sidewalk that's there now will just kind of shift over just a little bit for it. As for adding an extra place to allow museum visitors to purchase tickets to ride the train once the extension is finished, both Cave and Park District Director of Operations Ryan Raleigh said that's still being worked out. Hopefully, Cave said, construction won't interfere much with the operation of the train's current route. The original looped track will still function during the extension, she said, and the new track will also allow for a train to switch between the two whenever necessary. That's helpful, Cave said. Depending on the day, where if there's a really large event at the Children's Museum and having a train there isn't in their best interests, we can change the loop. After the board approved the work bid Wednesday, Park District Executive Director Bill Clevenger said the project is another opportunity to provide new amenities for families to enjoy while visiting the Scoville Zoo area. Board Commissioner Bob Briley II also said he was a fan of the extension. I love the idea, he told Cave and Chastain Senior Associate Jeremy Buning during the meeting. I think it's fantastic. Track bids. The Decatur Park District received 4 bids to construct the planned expansion of Scoville Zoo's ZO&O Express train route. At $2,055,801, O'Shea Builders was the lowest-based bid and was approved by District's Board of Commissioners. The following are the other base bids that were received for the project. Entler Excavating, $2,198,547. Halverson Construction, $2,202,900. Sangamo Construction, $2,193,993. Some of the base bids came with 2 alternate bids for landscaping in the Children's Museum of Illinois parking lot and for installing excavated footings instead of drilled shafts for the bridge's support structures. The district's Board of Commissioners was asked to reject both alternate bids because district staff plans to do the landscaping and the second alternate was not cost feasible. Clinton Walmart to Close by Kevin Barlow. Clinton. Walmart officials announced plans Wednesday to close its smallest Illinois retail store in Clinton on July 20th, a move that is a devastating blow to the DeWitt County community, a city official said. It's a huge loss of sales tax. It's about 70 jobs, I understand, and you just can't replace that, said City Finance Commissioner Tom Edmonds. The 35,000 square foot store opened in spring 1983 as the anchor of a West Side shopping center across from the Clinton High School. The decision to close our Clinton store is not an easy one, but financial performance was one of the factors, said Walmart Director of Communications Ann Hatfield. We opened this store in 1983, and we are as proud today as we've ever been with how the store leadership and associates have served and contributed to the local community over the years. We are grateful to the customers who have given us the privilege of serving them in Clinton. Plans for the building are unknown at this time. They said the store, as it sits, is too small compared to their current models, Edmund said. They don't sell enough groceries. Pharmacy representatives will begin working with clients to transition them to other pharmacies of their choice. Clinton Area Chamber of Commerce and Tourism Board Executive Director Marion Brissard said she, like all other city officials, was shocked by the news. This will affect a lot of households through the loss of jobs and revenue for the city, she said. Brissard also sits on the board of the DeWitt County Development Council, and DCDC officials are trying to find more answers. We have reached out to Walmart and the city of Clinton to see if there is anything we can still do to change it, she said. In a statement released by the city Wednesday afternoon, officials called the news of the closure heavy and unexpected. This will be a sorely missed long-term business relationship that hits our community very hard. Our prayers and hearts are with the employees that will have to make tough decisions in the days ahead. We will proceed to move forward to find another long-term economic development prospect to fit our community as we are losing a true asset, read the statement. Hatfield said employees will be the company's top priority in the next few months. Employees will be paid through August 31st, she said. Transfer opportunities to other stores may be possible, and severance packages may be available to eligible employees who do not transfer, she added. We hope they will continue working with Walmart, and we will work with them to find out what their interests are and will help them in whatever way we can, she said. Clinton residents also said they were surprised by the news. I'm not an expert, but think it's likely to hurt low-income families and our elderly the most, as well as the folks who don't leave Clinton daily and depend on lower-cost prescriptions and quick access to basic necessities, said Kristen Jackson. Amber Sperling said she worries about her friends who work at Walmart losing their jobs and about the closure's ripple effect. I also think that in the long run, it could possibly affect some of the restaurants and fast food businesses in town, because if people are going out of town to shop now, they most likely will eat out of town, Sperling said. I'm hoping I'm wrong on this. Man Denies Shooting Charges by Tony Reed. Decatur. A man, prosecutors said, fired multiple shots on a Decatur street, leaving one woman wounded while the shooter himself suffered a bullet wound to the neck, was arraigned on attempted murder charges Wednesday. Johnny L. Murphy, 41, pleaded not guilty in Macon County Circuit Court to attempted first-degree murder and aggravated battery with a firearm. He also denies charges of aggravated discharge of a firearm, possession of a weapon by a felon, and aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. Macon County State's Attorney J. Scott said Murphy and a co-defendant, Sally X. Tullison, had pulled up in a car driven by Murphy in the 1100 block of East Main Street on May 24th, and both men had opened fire. What they were shooting at wasn't disclosed. Reviewing evidence with Decatur Police Detective Brad Hall, Scott said the woman was hit in the left knee and had recognized one of the gunmen as Murphy. It's not clear how Murphy came to be hit himself, and no one has been charged with shooting him. Hall said police were interviewing the injured woman at St. Mary's Hospital when Murphy showed up seeking treatment for his neck wound. Although Hall said Murphy later admitted his part in the incident. Although a specific connection was not outlined in open court, Scott had Hall confirm that Murphy is the brother of murder victim Marvin T. Murphy, 39, who was shot dead Christmas Day at a house in the 1600 block of North 32nd Street. An arrest warrant for first-degree murder has been issued in that case for Floyd D. Banks, 37, who remains at large. Judge Jeffrey Geisler scheduled Murphy's case for a pretrial hearing August 7th. Murphy is being held in Macon County Jail in lieu of posting $20,000 bail. Wolf pack in Illinois? Man's trail camera footage prompts experts to conduct testing. By Ted Gregory, Chicago Tribune. Industry. After snacking on fried pretzels at the Lunchbox Cafe earlier this month, J. Smith sat in the narrow shade of his patio and started scanning video footage on a laptop. There they were again, the mysterious wolf-like creatures. For several years, Smith has captured trail cam footage of the curious canines that inhabit land he and his wife manage in a remote region, sometimes known as Forgottonia, about 235 miles southwest of Chicago. A farmer, musician, and amateur naturalist, Smith is convinced they're wolves. If true, that would be a shocking natural phenomenon in an area where there hasn't been a verified wolf sighting for decades. Experts are skeptical of Smith's conclusion, but they're intrigued enough to seek further study. The Illinois Department of Natural Resources, Chicago's Field Museum, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture are collaborating to determine exactly where these animals fall in the biological family of canids, carnivorous mammals that include wolves, coyotes, foxes, and domestic dogs. The Field Museum is conducting DNA tests on carcasses Smith has provided, with results expected in coming weeks. Most experts say evidence so far suggests that the creatures could be coyotes, indigenous wild dogs, a coyote-dog mix, or even a coyote-wolf hybrid. One researcher said it's possible they could be a species that has never been recorded. Whatever they are, Smith's cameras have yielded enticing clues. He said he's captured 40 separate videos of the animals and at least 70 photos since he first strapped his trail cameras on trees and posts about 5 years ago. Each new image thrills and stokes Smith, 57, who has lived in this town of 500 for about a decade. "We basically have a Grand Central Station for wolves here," Smith said, later adding, "Welcome to Wolfville, capital of Forgottonia." One of the challenges of identifying the mysterious animals is that there is already a debate among scientists about the genetic differences between wolves and coyotes. As DNA analysis has improved, it has called into question whether gray, red, and eastern wolves and coyotes represent 2, 3, or 4 distinct species, said David Meck, a senior scientist in biological resources with the U.S. Geological Survey, who has studied wolves since 1958. The latest and most controversial research emerged in 2016, when a highly regarded group of scientists concluded that only one distinct species of the wolf inhabits North America, the gray wolf. The other wolf-like canid, the researchers concluded, is the coyote. That's it. But a new twist arrived just this month, when separate researchers contended in Oxford's Academics Journal of Heredity that the red wolf is a distinct species. The notion that wolves are roaming Forgottonia, generally west of Springfield, east of the Mississippi River, north of St. Louis, and south of Galesburg, would upend the conventional natural history narrative. Before Europeans settled what would become the United States, wolves roamed from coast to coast. But after that, the animals were perceived as pests and predators of livestock. Government-sponsored extermination programs drove the animals to near extinction in the lower 48 states by the middle of the 20th century, according to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Smith contends that the wolves never fully vacated Forgottonia and that they've gone unrecorded because the area is so far removed from the paths of wildlife biologists. 26-year-old man shot in head. Herald in Review, Decatur. A 26-year-old man was shot in the head shortly before noon Wednesday, but is expected to survive, police said, while officers continue to search for information in the case. "No suspects have been identified," said Sergeant Steve Carroll of the Decatur Police Department. Police were sent at 11:55 a.m. to an address in the 800 block of South Cantrell Court on the city's east side in response to a report of the shooting. The shooting victim was taken to Decatur Memorial Hospital and is receiving treatment, Carroll said. Multiple officers were on the scene interviewing witnesses and going house to house to talk to neighbors, Carroll said. Areas surrounding the 800 block of South Cantrell Court, including some houses and backyards along South Webster Street and an alleyway leading into Cantrell Court, were blocked by yellow tape as police worked the scene. Decatur Police and Macon County Sheriff's Office vehicles were stationed at various points around the crime scene, and a canine unit was deployed in the area. Speaking late Wednesday night, Sergeant Sean Gunther said he could not provide further information about the shooting, as the department's investigation was still ongoing. Anyone with information is asked to call the police department at 217-424-2711. Its Investigations Division at 217-424-2734. Or, if they would like to remain anonymous, they can call Crime Stoppers at 217-423-8477. Tips. Briefs. Attempted murder suspect sought. Decatur. Decatur Police on Wednesday said an arrest warrant has been issued in the early Sunday shooting of a man in the 1000 block of East Main Street. Corey J. Marquis, 30, is wanted on a preliminary charge of attempted murder, according to the police department. He should be considered armed and dangerous, the release said. Police said the shooting that Marquis is wanted for happened at 3:15 a.m. Sunday. Decatur Police Lieutenant Brian Cleary previously said in a statement that officers were called to the area after reports of gunshots. The 34-year-old victim was taken from the area to HSHS St. Mary's Hospital and was later transferred to HSHS St. John's Hospital in Springfield. Police said the victim was treated for life-threatening injuries after the shooting. Anyone with information about the shooting or the whereabouts of Marquis are asked to call Decatur Police at 217-424-2711 or Crime Stoppers at 217-421-8477. Isaac Walton Lake Event Saturday, Decatur. The Decatur chapter of the Isaac Walton League of America, a nonprofit conservation organization, is hosting Blast of Summer on the Lake on Saturday, June 23rd, on Lake Decatur. Sign-up begins at noon at the IWLA Club Pavilion on Sangamon Road near Rees Bridge Road. The cost is $5 per hand. All cards must be returned to the pavilion by 5 p.m. to be eligible for a payout. Top three hands win. Food will be sold beginning at 4 p.m. at the pavilion for $5 per plate. For more information, go to IWLA Decatur IL on Facebook. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review for Thursday, June 21st, 2018. Please stay tuned.